You're listening to a recording from the Roger Smith Hotel in anticipation of the upcoming Roger Smith Hotel Cookbook Conference taking place February 7th through 9th, 2013.
I'm Andy Smith, one of the organizers for the Roger Smith Cookbook Conference scheduled for February 7th through the 9th here at the hotel. And with me today to interview Anne McBride happens to be Katie Kiefer. Katie?
Hi there, I'm Katie Kiefer. I host Straight No Chaser on the Heritage Radio Network, and together Andy and I are doing a series of little promotional interviews for the Cookbook Conference, which will feature some hundred and something panelists, academics, cookbook authors, experts in all kinds of subjects, definitely worth taking a look at online. Our conference website is cookbookconf, cookbookconf, as in Frank, .com. So check it out, and you can buy tickets online as well. And today we're in the studio with Anne McBride. Welcome, Anne. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Anne McBride is the editorial director for strategic planning at the Culinary Institute of America and the director of the Experimental Cuisine Collective. That is at NYU, or is it you just associated with NYU?
It is at NYU.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get into experimental cuisine?
I've been interested in that for a number of years, and first through Hervé Tisse in France and through his work there, and then he did a series of talks here in the U.S., and that was a launching pad to do something of our own with an American identity at NYU between food studies and chemistry.
So in addition to that, you've also written, or at least co-authored, cookbooks and co-authored Culinary Careers, How to Get Your Dream Job in Food. How do you get your dream job in food? This is what I've been interested in. Lots of people keep asking me. My students keep saying the same question. Do you have any good techniques that you want to suggest to people how to get that dream job?
Well, Andy, you have a dream job in food, right? And you've been doing that for a very long time.
I do, but I'm the exception. What can I say?
Yeah, you are, really.
Well, I think everyone feels that they are the exception, yeah. Because working in food, period, is such a dream indeed, no matter what you're doing. I think the key is to find your niche, and there's the reason behind this book is that there are so many jobs that are food-related, and so it's just a question of finding the right place for your passion and your skills and knowledge. So you may have been doing something for a long time and find a way to translate those skills into a food career, or you may just start your career in food, which in New York a lot of people do.
How did you get interested in food?
I grew up in a very food-focused family. On my mother's side, a farming family. On my dad's side, a very fine dining and fine cooking-oriented family. So, you know, seeing it came at me from all ends, and I never realized that I was a food person until time came to find my first job when I graduated and moved to New York. And I was watching a lot of Food Network while job hunting and realized I wanted to do something food-related. So I contacted publishing companies that were doing cookbooks and became an editorial assistant for a small publishing company working on cookbooks, a dream job.
I guess it is.
You don't think working on cookbooks is a dream job to me?
I think they're really fun to think up, but I think that the testing is a really hard part, and I think that most people, when they're writing a cookbook, don't recognize how much time and effort has to go into both recipe development, which is the fun part, but then recipe testing, which is maybe less fun. You tell me, Anne.
You actually did the recipe testing on that, or you made sure that...
Probably not.
No, I was working on the editorial side, so which the copy editing isn't that fun either.
I would imagine.
I guess it was an early lesson that no matter how dreamy your job is, there are always aspects of it that are a little bit less fun. And I think that's a good lesson to remember for any job you have afterwards, that the less fun parts are also part of the job. And
well,
you need to do that as well.
Well, especially in the food business, because, I mean, having been in the food business most of my life, you know, when you think you're going to go into a restaurant kitchen and, you know, whip up something fabulous, no, you're probably going to do what I did in France when I was started out, which was I was somewhere between the plongeur and the little commis or something. I mean, I was eviscerating game birds and plucking them and skinning rabbits.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah, 6 hours a day of eviscerating birds. Yeah, I can tell you it was not a lot of fun, but, you know, you learn a lot.
And it's very important to remember those lessons and to not skip those steps, because there is really something, that rigor and that methodical type of work that... And I think sometimes when you start doing work that is more involved and more creative, sometimes you long for those days where all you had to do were, you know, catching typos or peeling carrots.
There is something to that.
We are here on Lexington Avenue at the Roger Smith Hotel, seeing people walk by and hearing trucks in the background. So just for a point of explanation for that, you are on the panel, Cookbooks as Works of Art. Why are cookbooks works of art?
Well, I think that will be one of the points we'll be debating during the panel. For this particular session, we're talking about the type of books that a lot of people might never cook from, but are displaying prominently on their coffee tables.
We're talking coffee table cookbooks now.
Coffee table cookbooks, I think I might be one of the people on the panel who will argue that they are definitely useful also, and that it's not just about the art, but there is a practical component.
You actually use the recipes in the coffee table cookbooks?
I would argue that you do, and both for cooking but for thinking also, which takes it beyond the realm of just an object of display.
Yeah, I think they're inspirational. So you look through those cookbooks. I mean, I know that's what I do. I look through the cookbooks and I think, wow, I mean, I won't make that recipe, but I might want to make something like that that's maybe not quite as complicated. I mean, I'll never forget looking at Thomas Keller's Per Se cookbook and seeing his recipe for bœuf à la bourguignon, and he has lined the colander with cheesecloth so that the vegetable matter doesn't mix with the bouillon. And I mean, it was just like unbelievable.
You don't do that when you cook? Katie, I'm shocked.
I know, right?
I am shocked.
I mean, especially for a country recipe like that. But I think the bigger question actually is, when did cookbooks become a work of art as opposed to something totally practical?
I think there have always been books of art, or that have more of an artful function, if you want, not necessarily just a practical one. For me, it comes down to a question of audience, because when you see inspirational for those books, they're inspirational for someone like you, but they're aspirational for cooks, for example. Just the way that the cookbooks used to be, or, you know, they were cookbooks that were probably practical for some people, for the maids or for the country club chefs and things and people like that. But then there are people who were looking at them without thinking of actually using them. In terms of, I think, the way we think of them now in, 2013 as works of art, so in that family of books, the ones we'll be talking about during the panel, it's very much an 80s, it starts in the 80s, as the rise of the celebrity chef culture in America or around the world emerges, you have the cookbooks that follow. And so some of the older cookbooks we'll be talking about will be books like Alfred Portales, the early Jean-Georges cookbook. I think Charlie Trotter's cookbooks also fall into that category. And then you end up with Thomas Keller's The French Laundry cookbook as sort of the first one really of this new generation, where suddenly you have a chef book that people will pay $50 for.
$50?
Was much more than that.
No, it was $50.
Well,
it
was,
the first one was $50. And so, which was absolutely revolutionary that this, it seems, now that's sort of an average price for that type of book. But at the time, it was just really something that, it was a big gamble, and it sold more than 100,000 copies.
Yeah. Well, the editor for that book was Anne Bramson at Artisan Press, which is part of Workman. And would you say that she was the first editor to really sort of exploit that cookbook as art form kind of model? Because I don't really, I mean, as you say, Per Se, that was her book. And she did Eric Ripert's book after that, which was, I forget which one,
A
Return to Cooking. I mean, she has done absolutely amazing books, and I think she's had a huge influence on the way cookbooks are formatted now. Would you consider her one of the pioneers in that sense, or do you think it was kind of percolating along before she made that splash with Thomas Keller?
I'm always very cautious with recent history, to call people pioneers or icons when we have so few years to look back on.
True.
So I will just...
Spoken like a true historian.
Right?
Wonderful, right?
I knew you would approve, Andy. So I think Artisan really was making those types of books, and with Anna as its head, but also 10 Speed Press and Chronicle around the same time were really making these gorgeous coffee table cookbooks.
Yeah.
There's Anne, but there's also... It sort of happened. It coalesced at that moment, I think.
Yeah. I think she really brought... Again, it was that Star Chef thing that happened, too, at the same sort of around that same time. And people began thinking of chefs as something more than just the guy in the kitchen. I mean, before that, it was really the front of the house that was the
When French Laundry came out, it was probably 2001 or 2002. Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly. We were 20 years into that chef culture,
yeah.
And you know, close to 10 years after the Food Network beginning.
Right.
So it was sort of the generation that we are in the middle of now, or that started where we are now. I think then something like the Alinea cookbook is probably even more pivotal in terms of leading the way for things like modernist cuisine, you know, which is entirely self-published, or books like the 11 Madison Park cookbook, which they mostly packaged in the restaurant also. So you have French Laundry, Alinea, and also, of course, the European model of the El Bulli cookbooks, which they decided to publish themselves, which wasn't, you know, the self-publishing had such a bad rep for a long time here because the quality of books was just not up to par. And then when suddenly you have books like Alinea, even though it was distributed, but then when you see Modernist Cuisine and that's a self-published project, essentially, well...
Was that Nathan Myhrvold's
that's
book?
That's Nathan Myhrvold's book, yes. That has pushed the envelope so far that, you know, now it's, I think, it'll be interesting to see what the next wave is, with even more control probably from the creator's perspective. Mm.
In addition to your work at the CIA, in addition to your work at the Experimental Cuisine Collective, in addition to your graduate work at NYU, what's in your future?
Well, I think just continuing doing what I'm doing. I'm very, very lucky that I have a dream. I have dream jobs, not just a dream job, but I have a dream life in food. So just continuing that, I'm working on a couple new cookbook projects.
You want to talk about them?
Not quite,
not
because
yet.
I need
okay.
to finish the couple of proposals.
Well,
associated
getting a proposal
with
out and getting a publisher is
exactly.
useful. Yes.
Yes. Right. So I'll talk about those once the once there are publishers attached to those projects. And finishing my dissertation is a big goal.
And what's
for the
your
future.
Dissertation on? Your topic?
It's on the professionalization of cooking in America. So
wow.
how we've come to think of the chef in the U.S. the way we do today. Someone who is professionally trained, who is usually American, but who, if not, who has made his career in America. You know, staging a lot in America versus going to Europe, even though, of course, people still go. They might not go to France necessarily, but they still go to, they might go to Spain or Scandinavia now.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who's media savvy, which is, that's all part of this, you know, 30 years of history and this evolution.
I look forward to listening to you on your panel, Cookbooks as a Work of Art, at the Roger Smith Cookbook Conference, scheduled for February 7th through the 9th. People can find out more about the conference and how to register at the conference website, cookbookconf.com, cookbookconf.com. We look forward to your presentation, and I look forward to listening to more about you at the conference.
Thank you. I look forward to being there.
Thank you for joining us, Anne. Bye-bye now. We'll see you in a few weeks.
Thanks for listening to this interview. Visit heritageradionetwork.org for the complete set of recordings from the Roger Smith Hotel.